Hello, everyone. It's time to read the Ford Dodge Messenger for November 6th and 7th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening, as always. Lots to get to, so let's go ahead and get to it. The Lord's Cupboard Community Pantry will be closed Monday through Friday. During this time, asbestos will be removed from the building in preparation for the remodeling project, which will bring the cupboard up to the street level. The remodel is expected to be completed in early 2021. A ramp entrance and a handicap accessible pantry and restrooms are to be added. Back to Her Roots is a new owner of Bloomers on Central, is a Fort Dodge graduate. One of Rebecca Reitmeyer's first high school jobs was working at Bloomers, a coffee shop that has been a mainstay in Fort Dodge since the early 1990s. She worked for the original owner, Michelle Albert, before eventually working under Joanne Peterson and her daughter, Kristen Utley, the most recent owners. In all, Reitmeyer was an employee at Bloomers from 1996 to 2004 before moving to California for several years. Reitmeyer was well-liked by customers and the owners. They always told me when I worked for them jokingly that I would be the next owner, she said, so I guess I'm fulfilling my destiny here. Reitmeyer, a 1998 Fort Dodge Senior High graduate, returned to Fort Dodge in recent years. She took ownership of the business in August after learning that Peterson was retiring. She took a couple months to remodel the space at 900 Central Avenue, Suite Number 10, before reopening October 27th. Bloomers had been closed since March, mostly due to the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the eye-catching features inside the shop includes a fish tank made out of a retro TV console. The old TV was driven from California to Iowa over the summer. It was just at someone's house, and they were getting rid of it, and I thought it would make a cool fish tank, Reitmeyer said. It wouldn't fit into the back of the RV, so it was in the front seat of the RV the whole 1,800 miles. Reitmeyer also added all new furniture and fresh coats of paint. I was going for a comfortable vibe, where people want to sit and meet their friends, Reitmeyer said. Before I was even open, there was an older couple that walked by and said they saw people meeting in here, and that it looked like a scene from a movie. They just thought it looked so cozy inside, a place where you can come into and feel like you're at home, but you're not. Hard and soft seating is available for customers. The east wall is brick. The brick wall here is awesome, Reitmeyer said. I always wanted a house with a brick wall, so this is close enough. She enjoys the atmosphere of working in a coffee shop. People are generally happy when they come into the place because they know they are going to get coffee or something to eat, she said. People are generally in a good mood. I like the barista part where it's sort of like a bartender, but you're not dealing with alcohol. But also the stories you hear from people. Customers become your family. They come in every day. You get to know what's happening. While living in California, Reitmeyer continued to gain experience in the business. She worked at a place called the Neighborhood Cup in Alija Viejo, California. I was there the first day they opened from 2005 through 2010, and I also volunteered at an assisted living home and played piano there. Her experience at the Neighborhood Cup was valuable. I learned a lot as far as the way coffee should be and creating things with the same consistency every time and keeping it a family atmosphere too, she said. They were like family to me in a lot of ways. That's why I stayed out in California, because I met them. I met my friends through them. They had a knack of creating this environment that opened up to the community. In 2011, Reitmeyer was on a first date on Halloween night when she was hit by a car while walking across the street. She suffered multiple injuries. She also worked as a lab technician in the early 2000s, decided she would go back to school to earn a degree in healthcare management. She would go on to work in sales and marketing for an assisted living home. At one point, she worked as a barista at an upscale appliance and fixture store. She never planned to stay in California as long as she did, but Reitmeyer said she appreciates the experiences she had while there. I was going to leave for 6 months, and it ended up being a lot longer than 6 months, she said. In 2017, she and her husband decided it was time to move back to Iowa. I was pregnant. It was really expensive out there, she said. My husband and I are missionaries, also, in El Salvador for part of the year. We weren't going to be able to continue that and have a child and live in a really expensive Orange County, California. Although Reitmeyer has worked as a barista in multiple coffee shops, she was nervous when first opening the doors as a new owner. I was nervous because I didn't know what to expect, she said. I was hoping there wouldn't be a line out the door. Right now, it's me, myself, and the rest of my family just helping out. I hoped it would be something I could handle. So far, it's been steady and not too overwhelming. In addition to running a business, Reitmeier is an academic assistant at Iowa Central Community College. Reitmeier has added some new items to the Bloomers menu. I kept a lot of things the same for made-to-order sandwiches because I wanted customers who had been coming here for years and years to feel like they were at home here, she said. But I brought in some different salads, some breakfast items. The Acai Bowl is a new addition, along with breakfast sandwiches. On the coffee side, Bloomers offers iced coffee drinks and blended espresso drinks. I brought in new coffee from where I had worked in California, she said. She also uses Keen Coffee and Clatch Coffee. I brought in those companies. That's where I get the beans. I worked at each of those two places. Those are the two companies where I knew it was high-quality coffee and high-quality beans. Reitmeier has also added a panini press to offer hot sandwiches during the wintertime. Some popular items on the menu include the lavender latte, white chocolate macadamia nut mocha, and the English toffee mocha. The seven-layer bars are a popular holdover item. We have people that come in just for those, she said. When she has a chance to enjoy a beverage herself, Reitmeier said a plain cup of coffee does her just fine. If it's good beans and good water, I'm happy with just a hot cup of coffee, she said. Otherwise, I like iced coffee with some sort of flavoring on it or some cream. Bloomers also sells smoothies. Reitmeier is happy to be part of the revitalization efforts in downtown. In California, generally main streets in these little towns that have grown bigger, that's their hopping place, she said. I think Fort Dodge downtown is beautiful, so I love that they are trying to make that more of a scene. She appreciates the welcoming attitude of most Iowans, the people who come into the shop. One of the things that made it so I wasn't so nervous, Iowans in Fort Dodge seem to be forgiving, Reitmeier said. If I was opening in California, people don't seem so forgiving sometimes because there's so many options out there that they maybe don't give you a second chance. Bloomers is open Tuesday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. and Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The coffee shop is closed on Sundays and Mondays. 20 Years of Angels is the next news story from the Messenger. 20 years ago, Sue and Jim English of Clare bought their first angel ornament for the Angels of Love fundraiser through the Friends Board of Unity Point Health, Fort Dodge. The angel was purchased in memory of their niece, Krista Fitzgerald, who was killed in an automobile crash at the age of 11 in 1999. I want our family to know we are still thinking of her, and it's a great way to help in the gift shop at Unity Point Health, Trinity Regional Medical Center, Sue said. The English family is one of three families who have bought Angels of Love every year since the fundraiser started. When they first came out, I thought it was a good idea, and I just kept on with it, Sue said. I'm surprised it's been that many years. Sarah Beyer of Ankeny was working in radiology at the Fort Dodge Hospital when she began buying the angels 20 years ago. She bought them in memory of her father who died in hospice when Beyer was a senior in high school. Every year she would give the angels to her mother who served as a hospice volunteer. When I originally bought the angel in memory of my dad, the angel always went to my mom. We thought it was a neat way to put my dad's name up there in honor of him. Eventually, I added my eventual mother-in-law in memory of the son she lost, and an angel went to her. About 10 years ago, Byer's mother-in-law passed away. Byer's mother passed away 2.5 years ago. She still purchases two angels each year, one in memory of her parents and one for her in-laws. Beyer, who now works at Unity Point Health Des Moines, only has one sent to her. The other one is donated. The angels are special to her. It was a tradition for my mom and I to go to the hospital and pick up the angel every year. It's such a good cause, I wouldn't want to stop at this point. Part of the fun is seeing what the angels look like. It's kind of neat to see how they've changed over the years. They have done a great job with it. Beyer recently got this year's angel in the mail. I think it's one of the best ones they've ever done. It's just beautiful. Lois Sampson of Humboldt first bought an angel 20 years ago when she worked in environmental services at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Sampson now buys three angels each year, one for her daughter, another for her son, and one that stays with her. Her daughter-in-law, Barb Sampson, gets the angel when she and John Sampson come home for Christmas. Sampson's daughter, Jenny Spear, puts up her own angel tree every year. The tree is filled mostly with angels from the Angels of Love fundraiser, but does have a few others she picked up elsewhere. Every angel she's gotten from the hospital, she's put up an angel tree. My other daughter displays them around the home, and I display them here, too. The angels are for the whole family to enjoy, Samson said. The girls and my grandchildren just love looking at the angels, she said. Samson said the angels are a way to remember those who have gone before us. I've just kept doing it because I know how much the angels mean to me. I lost my mom in January, my dad in 2010. The angels are like a guardian angel in the house for me. I lost my sister-in-law last year, 1 week before Christmas. These angels resemble my guardian angels of all my loved ones who have gone before us. The Angels of Love are on sale at the Trinity Gift Shop. Angels may be purchased with a $15 minimum donation. The gift shop has ordered about 1,000 angels. This year, the angel is a bell. It's on display at the Trinity Gift Shop. Cheryl Sayers, president of the Friends Board of Unity Point Health Fort Dodge, said she loves to see people pick up the angels. I see people purchase them from the hospital, and there usually is a story connected with the person they are honoring. I feel really honored to be there in giving them to the angel. Some I know personally, some I don't. Some are in memory, some are in honor. Some this year are honoring essential workers. It's for a variety of reasons, and I think people feel joyful when they are doing it. They are remembering loved ones or someone who has taken care of them in the hospital. It's just a joyful thing. In past years, the project has supported endeavors such as purchasing a bariatric bed and new wheelchairs for the hospital. This year, the money will go toward a relief room for hospital and essential staff, Sarah said. Since it's been such a stressful year, we want to support all of our hospital staff. It would be a place that staff could go to just pause for a while. Our staff is very important to the Friends Board, and I want to support them in any way we can. For more information on the Angels of Love, call 515-574-6656. Catholic Daughters of the Americas, Court 216, will hold its monthly meeting at 6 o'clock Thursday at Corpus Christi Center at 402 North 8th Street. New member initiation mass will be held, followed by dinner, Christmas card project, and meeting. Contact Betty Kelly at 573-2512 no later than noon Tuesday for a dinner reservation. Andrew McCarville, McCarville Financial Network, recently completed the coursework and passed the final exam for a certified financial planner. CFP certification is the highest standard in personal financial planning. Approximately less than 23% of United States financial advisors hold this designation. McCarville is a registered representative for McCarville Financial Network. The firm is currently accepting new clients. From our files, November 2005, there is a picture in the paper of Ron Hargrave of Webster City as he shows off the results of a restoration he performed on an Iowa license plate from 1927. Hargrave retired in 1995 and took up restoring license plates as a hobby. Looking at the news of record, on Thursday, the Fort Dodge police had four domestic calls, a hit and run at the intersection of Kenya Road and Laneson Avenue, trespassing at the intersection of 12th Avenue Southwest and 15th Street Southwest, a burglary in the 700 block of 1st Avenue South, a structure fire in the 800 block of 5th Street Northwest, criminal mischief in the 4th Avenue intersection of 4th Avenue North and North 18th Street, a sexual assault was reported, and a shoplifter was reported in the 2200 block of 2nd Avenue North. In magistrate court on Friday, failure to appear against Melissa Martin of Humboldt transferred to district court. Violation of parole, Christopher Sorensen, 38, transferred to the parole board. No insurance and leaving the scene of an accident. No insurance against Eric Hasfholm, age 34, of Farnhamville, fined $801.75. The charge of leaving the scene of an accident against Eric Hasfholm of Farnhamville, those charges were dismissed. Refuse collection route will change a little bit since we have Veterans Day coming up this week. In observance of the Veterans Day holiday on Wednesday, refuse collection routes for the city of Fort Dodge will be on the normal days for pickup. The Wednesday recycling route will be collected on November 13th for those customers west of 15th Street. The Central Maintenance Facility Yard Waste Disposal Site located at 3001 8th Avenue South, will be closed on November 11th. There will be curbside yard waste pickup on November 13th. The Sanitation Division requests that residents place their refuse and recyclables along with curbside waste for collection by 6 o'clock in the morning on these dates. Webster County officials are pleading for public cooperation into COVID as cases and the positivity rate continues to go up. With renewed urgency from increasing COVID-19 hospitalizations, public health, hospital, and elected officials are begging Webster County residents to wear a mask and refrain from large gatherings as current trends run the risk of exhausting county resources. As community service organizations, we are coming together to plead with the community to please help in our fight against COVID-19, the joint statement said Friday. It is crucial for the public to understand that the challenges we are facing as a community are very real and urgent. In a statement from officials at Unity Point Health, Trinity Regional Medical Center, Webster County Public Health, Webster County Board of Health, Webster County Supervisors, the City of Fort Dodge, and the Fort Dodge Police Department, county and city leaders warn that the county is at a, quote, critical point in the state's fight against COVID-19 as positive cases continue to increase rapidly. As Community Health Center of Fort Dodge moved its rapid testing center to a new drive-through location at 5th Avenue South and South 15th Street, Webster County's positivity rate jumped to nearly 21%, placing it in the top one-fifth of the state. The positivity rate is the proportion of those tested whose results are positive. Public health officials widely recommend maintaining a rate of under 5%. Iowa's positivity rate is second highest in the nation. 72 counties have a rate above 15%, the state's own benchmark for potentially discontinuing in-person schooling. Webster County Public Health Director Kerry Prescott said, quote, the current situation is not good, end quote. As of Friday, Webster County's total caseload had increased to 2,274, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. In the last 9 days alone, the county gained 334 cases. The county's death toll now reads up to 17, up 2 in the last 9 days. Webster County's per capita infection rate is the 12th highest in the state, punching in 37% higher than the next highest urban county, Dallas County, and higher than nearly every county home to major cities in the state. Nearly every other county with higher rate per capita rates than Webster County is in northwestern Iowa. In Friday's statement, Webster County Public Health said that the contact tracing has been identifying cluster events with multiple COVID-19 contacts, which results in additional exposures and more positive cases. The agency's entire staff of about 30 people is now working on contact tracing in addition to typical programming. As the county enters a critical phase, public cooperation is necessary to flatten the spike of infections to avoid overwhelming the hospital and skilled nursing facilities, officials warn. As the holidays approach, the county's situation could be further compounded. Events with large groups of people, 10 or more, refusing to wear masks have an exponential effect of leading to more cases as the infections incubate and get spread further. Preventative measures requested frequently, wearing a mask, requiring patrons of your business to wear a mask, limiting groups to less than 10 people, frequently washing and sanitizing hands, staying home when sick, practicing social distancing, and getting your flu shot have figuratively turned the face of Webster County Public Health blue since March. That's what we're really wanting to drive home, said Kelly Bloomquist, Public Information Officer for Webster County Public Health. These are simple preventative behaviors we are asking of people. If we can get people to follow some of these, we can be in a better place. It is going to take every one of us doing our part to get this virus under control, the joint statement said. Trinity Regional Medical Center is continuing to, quote, see high volumes of patients and an increase in COVID-19 hospitalizations, according to CEO Leah Glasgow, as pandemic-related hospitalizations in Iowa continue to break records. Every day we are seeing more and more COVID-19 positive patients that need hospitalization, she said Thursday. Adequate staffing at the hospital remains a challenge as a growing number of staff stay home with COVID-19 or are forced to isolate due to community spread, according to Carrie Jones, chief nursing executive at Trinity. In addition to higher coronavirus hospitalizations, the hospital is seeing patients who are, quote, very sick. Our staff is both physically and mentally exhausted, she said Thursday. They've been fighting this virus and fighting for their patients for 8 months. Two recent nursing home outbreaks listed by the Iowa Department of Public Health at the Marion Home and at Friendship Haven list 22 combined cases with 6 recoveries so far. Webster County Supervisor Mark Campbell told the Messenger that county supervisors inquired about the possibility of a mask mandate ordinance this week. The idea was dropped Thursday after County Attorney Darren Driscoll spoke with the Iowa Attorney General, leading the county to the impression that it did not have the authority to impose one. Despite the Iowa Attorney General and Governor Kim Reynolds' administration discouraging local mask mandates, several counties and cities around the state have defied them in an effort to curb local infections. Without implementing a mandate, we put this statement together in hopes that requesting and strongly urging people to do all preventative measures will help, Campbell said. We know some people still won't, but we're going to do everything we can to help educate people and flatten the curve. Philip Nelson, Director of Facility Operations at Unity Point Health Fort Dodge, recently was recertified as a Certified Healthcare Facility Manager by the American Hospital Association. A CHFM oversees financial, technical, and administrative operations within the healthcare organization. This includes planning, organizing, implementing, evaluating, and monitoring all facility programs and departments. Nelson is in charge of identifying problems and or process deficiencies to create solutions and check the reliability and functionality of all assets within the facility, services, and personnel. Additionally, a CHFM reviews monthly financial statements and operational reports and helps HR with personnel duties as well. Nelson completed all requirements of a Herculean facility manager and passed the prestigious American Hospital Association exam to become recertified. The Fort Dodge Public Library has announced that they will be closed Wednesday in observance of Veterans Day. The library will be open to the public at 10 o'clock Thursday. For more information, call the library at 573-8167. The next article is entitled Taking Off, Young Aviation Enthusiast Restores a 1959 Plane. Ever since he could remember, Boston Gordon's father took him to the Fort Dodge Regional Airport, where he was a ramp agent for Northwest Airlink. And while it may have been but a small token of support for the budding interest in his father's son, Gordon, who is now 19 years old, has taken off with it. By age 16, Gordon was working as a ramp agent himself for Air Choice One in Fort Dodge. Not long after, he was introduced to the maintenance side of aviation. At age 19, the Fort Dodge Senior High graduate had become an aviation maintenance lineman for Fort Dodge Flight Support. On the side, he earned his private pilot's license. But now, as the Indian Hills Community College student restores a 1959 Piper Tri-Pacer airplane for a Rockwell City man, he has fully rounded his interest in aviation with a passion that perhaps eclipses his father's. I've always wanted to be in aviation since I was little, Gordon said. I think that my dad knew that I wanted to be a pilot or be in aviation. Ever since his father took him to work, Gordon has had a hard time staying off or near the tarmac. I feel like with aviation, it's a different world up there. When I go flying, all the worries are gone. It's completely different flying than what it is here on the ground. And now, as he studies to become an aviation maintenance technician with the goal of becoming an aviation maintenance inspector with the FAA, he hopes to bring that feeling to other flyers, even those who use the type of transportation as more of a means to an end. There's times I'm working at the airport, and the plane's just sitting out there. I go out there and see all the passengers boarding the aircraft. I just think to myself, you know, right in front of me, that's why I'm doing it, to keep those passengers safe every time they fly. His first restoration project is sure to be a beaut when it's finished, a 1959 Piper Tri-Pacer. Sourced from a Rockwell City owner, Gordon delivered the aircraft to his school's working grounds in Ottumwa, where Gordon and other classmates will soon start working on the restoration for fun. Redoing the fabric on a fabric-skinned plane, Gordon and others will eventually give the plane a new door and in more convenient spot its floats, sea legs, that will let the plane land on water. The project will take about 2 years to complete for the single-engine piston aircraft that was sitting in a hangar for about 10 years. Between now and its completion, there will be a lot of welding, cutting, and manufacturing to modify the frame of the airplane and install a new door. A right-hand side door, which will allow the pilot to enter without crawling over controls, will be constructed from scratch with parts sent by Piper. That's the main project of it, Gordon said. To do that, there's lots of structural bars we have to take apart, fuel lines, and control cables to move around. And since the outside is covered in torn fabric, there will be a lot of cutting, sewing, and gluing as well. Perhaps the most difficult part of the restoration, Gordon said. It needs to be done in perfect environmental conditions, controlled for fickle conditions like temperature and drafts. That's how you used to fly back then, he said of the fabric variety, which is a rarity since sheet metal became the go-to for plane construction. Metal construction now allows planes to go faster and are much more resistant to damage. Like the unique nature of this craft, what keeps Gordon in aviation is the variety. There's never a normal day in aviation, he said. On the mechanical side, you have tons of things that could go wrong and need fixed. While he works in mechanics, the student hopes to be able to someday get an instrument-rated pilot's license that would allow him to fly at night following just the instruments on a plane's panel. After the restoration is done, Gordon will conduct and lead other students inspecting the aircraft before the Federal Aviation Administration gives the final okay to let Gordon put the plane back into the air and fly it back to its owners. By that time, the college graduate hopes that, like him, his finished restoration will be airworthy. Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center has received the American Heart Association and American Stroke Association Get With The Guidelines Stroke Gold Plus Quality Achievement Award. The award recognizes the hospital's commitment to ensuring stroke patients receive the most appropriate treatment according to nationally recognized research-based guidelines based on the latest scientific evidence. Trinity earned the award by meeting specific quality achievement measures for the diagnosis and the treatment of stroke patients at a set level for a designated period. These measures include evaluations of the proper use of medications and other stroke treatments, aligned with the most up-to-date evidence-based guidelines with the goal of speeding recovery and reducing death and disability for stroke patients. Before discharge, patients should also receive education on managing their health, get a follow-up visit scheduled, as well as other care transition interventions. Trinity is dedicated to improving the quality of care for our stroke patients by implementing the AHA Get With The Guidelines Stroke Initiative, said Leah Glasgow, President and CEO of Unity Point Health Fort Dodge. The tools and resources provided help us track and measure our success in meeting evidence-based clinical guidelines developed to improve patient outcomes. In addition to this award, I want to recognize the thorough and efficient actions of our area EMS, emergency room providers and nurses, lab and radiology staff, as we were able to administer clot-busting medication to many eligible patients. According to the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, stroke is the number 5 cause of death and the leading cause of disability in adults in the United States. On average, someone in the United States suffers a stroke every 40 seconds, and nearly 800,000 people suffer a new or recurrent stroke each year. The death of a Kossuth County jail inmate found unresponsive in his cell October 17th was determined to be a suicide, according to a news release from the Iowa Department of Criminal Investigation. An autopsy from the state medical examiner determined that Wesley Mann Christopher Mark Brunswald, age 44, died by ligature strangulation, ruling the manner of death as suicide. Brunswald was booked into the jail on October 12th and was awaiting transfer to the Iowa Medical Classification Center in Coralville to begin serving a prison sentence for a probation violation. The DCI reported that Brunswald was interacting normally with another inmate and jail staff the evening before his death. He and other inmates were placed in lockdown for the night at 10:30 on October 16th. He was alone in his cell until 7:12 the next morning when he was discovered unresponsive, lying on his back in his cell's bed. Algona EMS pronounced the man dead at the scene. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, and this is the Fort Dodge Messenger. And now we will take a look at today's obituary page. Ruby Marie Hurley. Ruby Marie Hurley, 97, of Fort Dodge, died November 2nd at Fort Dodge Health and Rehab. A memorial service will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family. Bruce Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Ruby was born July 7, 1923 in Pomeroy, the daughter of Grover and Mary Nadine Green Briggs. She graduated from Pomeroy High School in 1941 and continued her education at North Junior High Community College. Over the years, Ruby worked at Kotski's Fishing and the Wakanda Hotel as a switchboard operator. There she met several celebrities, including Johnny Cash and the Lone Ranger. She loved her job, and she also worked at Hadnig Plumbing and Heating until her retirement in 1965. Ruby enjoyed garage sales and thrift stores. She loved animals and reading. She is survived by her daughter, Michelle Ross Douglas, several grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. She is also survived by many nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents, Grover Briggs and Mary Nadine Davis, her husband in 2003, Orville Hurley, a son, Michael Briggs, granddaughter, Tony Ross, son-in-law, Frank Douglas, four sisters, and one brother. LaVon Canavan, LaVon P. Canavan, 96, of Fort Dodge, died Wednesday, November 4th at the Marion Home. Graveside services will be Thursday, November 12th at 10:30 at Corpus Christi Cemetery. LaVon is survived by her children, Tom, Linda and Gary Murdoch, Sharon Hannah, and Brad Mortensen, grandchildren Aaron Murdoch, Andy Murdoch, Jeremy Canavan, and John and Jennifer Canavan, and three great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, John and Carrie Rice, her husband James in 1993, and sisters Teresa, Isabel, and siblings Teresa, Isabel, and Stanley. LaVon Rice was born August 3, 1924 in Fort Dodge. She attended schools and graduated from Fort Dodge. In 1947, she was united in marriage to James Canavan in Elk Point, South Dakota, and the couple made their home in Fort Dodge. She worked for Hormel's and later the Fort Dodge Labs, where she retired from in the 1980s. LaVon loved to garden and was an active member in the Methodist Church. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Lofisweiler Seaver's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Joseph Peed. It's with deep regret that we announce the passing of our beloved Joseph Joe William Peed, who died at Friendship Haven the morning of November 4th. Born and raised on a farm near Otho, Joe was one of John and Dolores Peed's seven children, five boys and two girls. Joe was always quick to give credit his childhood and upbringing on the farm for his work ethic, discipline, determination, and entrepreneurial spirit that would ultimately lead him to becoming one of Fort Dodge's most cherished, generous, and humble business and civic leaders. Joe attended school in Otho and graduated from St. Edmund High School in 1965. After a short time at Iowa Central, he enlisted in the Army in 1966 and was assigned to the Infantry Division in Vietnam. He returned to the States after his tour in Vietnam to work as an Army Public Relations Specialist in Baltimore and Washington. It was during his time away from home and experiences in major cities that impressed upon him his deep love and passion for everything hometown Fort Dodge had to offer. He returned to home, and in November 1969, he began working in the family business that grew to be Heartland Communications, a nationally acclaimed marketing and publishing company with titles such as Computer Hotline, Farmer's Hotline, Contractor Hotline, Crane Hotline, Printer's Hotline, Aviator's Hotline, and Industrial Machine Trader. Joe understood the advantages of living and working in Fort Dodge. He always gave credit for the company's success to his employees for their hard work, honesty, and values. Joe believed in hiring good people, showing them the way, and then getting out of the way to let them shine. He had this quote from Theodore Roosevelt on his desk: "The best executive is the one who has the sense enough to pick good people and to do what he wants, and the self-restraint to keep from meddling with them while they do it." Joe was a master team builder and motivator. He was also instrumental in the startup of another successful Fort Dodge business, Mid-Country Machinery, with his son, Lucas. Not settling for simply being a successful businessman, Joe believed strongly in giving back and began devoting his time and resources on promoting Fort Dodge and doing anything he could to make it better. A random sample of certificates and awards and plaques from his office includes Frontier Days Parade Grand Marshal, Outstanding Corporate Citizenship Award, YMCA Century Club member, SMMID Executive Board for Downtown Revitalization. Fort Dodge Airport Commission in special recognition for outstanding contribution to the White House Conference on Small Business, just to name a few. Throughout Joe's entire life, he always remained grounded and humble and respectful for all his blessings. He was fond of saying, "The main things that make me happy are my work and my sons. My boys are my life, and my business is just a hobby." In 1971, Joe married Marianne King and had three sons, Justin, Lucas, and Jacob. Joe divorced and has been married to Sue Badger ever since. Joe is survived by his wife, Sue, for 25 years. His children, Lucas and Shelley Pede, Jacob and Jessica Pede, stepsons Travis and Casey Badger, grandchildren Lexi, fiancé Connor McLeod, Landon and J.C. Creighton, Jordan and Joey, great-grandson Tucker, and siblings Tom, Marianne, Kathy, Rich, and Jerry. Joe was preceded in death by his son Justin, brother Denny, and parents John and Dolores. Joe is a faithful member of Holy Trinity Parish. Mass of Christian burial will be 11 o'clock Wednesday, November 11th at Holy Trinity Church, with burial to follow at Corpus Christi Cemetery. Military rites will be conducted by VFW Post 1856 and the United States Army Honor Guard. Due to COVID and the family's desire to keep everyone safe, no visitation will be held. The Mass will be live-streamed via Laufesweiler Seaver's Funeral Home Facebook page. Memorials may be left to the Friendship Haven Mission and Vision Fund in Fort Dodge. From Gilmore City, Tammy Marchant. Tammy M. Marchant, 60, of Gilmore City, died Thursday, November 5th at Humboldt County Memorial Hospital. She is survived by her husband, Gary, sons Colby Marchant, Devin, and Mackenzie Marchant, her grandchildren Kinsley, Levi, Jaden, Frankie, and Ryan, her mother Marlene Hamilton, brother Kevin and Brenda Terwilliger, stepbrother Rod and Lenny Hamilton, stepsister Barb and Jay Wyeth, and several nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her father, Virgil Terwilliger, her stepfather, Jim Hamilton, and her uncle, James Mosher. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Mason Linhart Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Humboldt is in charge of arrangements. Monsignor Thomas Donahoe, 94, of Fort Dodge, died Thursday, November 5th at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Mass of Christian burial will be Wednesday, November 11th at Holy Trinity Church. A visitation is 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Laufesweiler Seaver's Funeral Home is handling arrangements. William Bill Andrews, 72, died November 3rd at Trinity Regional Medical Center due to complications from surgery. A life celebration will be held at a later date. Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services are entrusted with arrangements. Bill is survived by his wife Judy, his children Sean and Charity Andrews, and Brenda Hafner, Cody Heinman, five grandchildren, Shauna, Justin, Jacob, Taylor, and Sarah, and one great-grandchild on the way, his brothers Narlin and Diane, and Gary. He was preceded in death by his parents, William Sr. and Loretta Grossnickel Andrews, his infant siblings, Joyce and Kenneth, his brother Keith Andrews Sr., sister Mercedes Schwering, and son-in-law Tim Hafner. Rose Mary Diedrich, 83, of Humboldt, died November 4th at Humboldt County Memorial Hospital. Rose Mary is survived by her sons Frank and Olga Diedrich, Eric and Amy Diedrich, Christopher and Ashley Diedrich, and son-in-law Robert Slinkard, grandchildren Victoria Slinkard, Ross Slinkard, Gunnar Diedrich, Cora Diedrich, Danica Diedrich, and Jared Diedrich. She was preceded in death by her husband of 58 years, Jerry, her daughter Cecilia Diedrich Sinkard, and her parents. Visitation is Sunday, November 8th from 4 to 6 at Mason Linhart Funeral Home. His services will be November 9th at 11 o'clock at Zion Lutheran Church in Humboldt, and burial will be in the Indian Mound Cemetery. From Sac City, Maryland, Henrik died. Family graveside services for Maryland Henrik were held on Saturday, November 7th, and Farber Ottoman Funeral Home was in charge of arrangements. James Showalter from Britt has died. His funeral service was held November 8th at the Ewing Funeral Home in Britt. And from Algona, Alice Challey, her service was held at the Oakcrest Funeral Home in Algona. And that is the extent of the obituary page. Mike and Deb Hsu. Mike and Deb Hsu of Fort Dodge will celebrate their 35th wedding anniversary. Their family includes Lyle and Lauren Hsu, Martin Hsu, and Mariah Knudsen, and Michael Keck, and they have one granddaughter. Deborah Shadeg Keck and Michael Hsu were married November 8, 1985 at his parents' home in Fort Dodge. They later married at Holy Rosary Church in Fort Dodge on March 3, 1990. He retired from the United States Postal Service in 2003 after 31 years of service. She retired from the U.S. Postal Service in 2013 after 34 years of service. Fort Dodge Noon Kiwanis Club presented the third grade classes in Southeast Valley Dayton with dictionaries. This is the 13th year that the Kiwanis members have provided dictionaries to the third graders. Dictionaries were also donated to third graders at St. Paul Lutheran School, Manson Northwest Webster, Prairie Valley Farnhamville Community Christian School, and St. Edmund Elementary. The students at Fort Dodge Senior High are bringing Shakespeare to the Gale Neiswanger Theater next week with a twist. The fall play is William Shakespeare, A Midsummer Night's Dream, but the setting will be a bit more modern than the 16th century. The text that we were reading is the original Shakespeare, but we kind of adapted the costumes and set to be in the 1950s, said Fort Dodge Senior High senior Gracie Miller, who plays the mischievous sprite Puck. We were hoping to create a kind of Tim Burton feeling to it, Lindy Krug, director and theater teacher, added. Give it sort of a fantastical world quality like a dream world, like a dream would be. The cast and crew of about 30 have been hard at work the past several weeks, memorizing lines, designing sets, and preparing for opening night. It hasn't been easy, however. The weekend of the performances has already had to be postponed for a week. I think the biggest challenge was getting people quarantined along the way, said Josh Meyer, a senior who plays the character Lysander. The cast was divided into different rehearsal groups to help limit contact with others, and for the most part, when someone did have to miss rehearsal, they weren't completely absent. We had them propped up on Google Meets calls so they could still do their lines, but they're not actually in the space with us. All of the cast and crew wear face or masks throughout rehearsal, and will continue to do so during performances, adding another challenge. We have to really project, and the face shields are going to contain our sound more, so we're going to have to project a lot more, said senior Victoria Pavic, who plays Helena. The play itself was a challenge to overcome for the teens as well. Shakespeare is very hard to memorize, Pavic said, because the words are not like the English we speak now, so it's hard to get used to. Miller said the students involved in the production are very grateful that the fall play is happening at all. When it's about time for auditions, I was worried we wouldn't even have a fall play, or that if we did have a play, it would be so far from what we all know and love and are used to, but we have really adapted well, I think, she said. Krug, as director, was determined to have some sort of production for the students to perform in, despite the challenges posed by COVID-19. These kids, especially the senior class, have had so many opportunities changed for them or be taken away from them because of the pandemic, and as their director, I really wanted to provide them with as much normalcy as you can, she said. The show has its opening night on Friday, 7 o'clock. Other performances will be at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock on the 14th. Tickets are $5 and are limited to 150 audience members for each show. To reserve a pre-sale voucher, call Fort Dodge Senior High at 955-1770. Masks will be required to attend the shows. Joyce Peck will celebrate her 80th birthday on November 16th. Her family includes Jerry and Darcy Peck, Amy and Bruce Walrod, and Lori Cook. She has 7 grandchildren, 1 great-grandchild, and her husband Don is deceased. Joyce Strutzenberg was born November 16th, 1940 in Fort Dodge. She grew up near Kinnearum, and during her high school years, her family moved to Fort Dodge, where she graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High School in 1958. She married Don Peck, and together they had 3 children. She worked at Fort Dodge Labs and Randall Foods. She retired from Randall Foods and stayed at home watching her grandchildren through their early years. Her husband passed away in 2013. GWRRA chapter of Iowa West installed new directors. The Goldwing Road Riders Association chapter, Iowa W, recently installed new chapter directors, Tim and Diane Cook. Included in the chapter are Roger and Vicki Harris of Fort Dodge, Tim and Diane Cook, the new chapter directors, along with John and Yvette Moravec from the Iowa District Directors. Knights of Columbus has donated to Coats for Kids. Joel Groth, Grand Knight of the Fort Dodge Knights of Columbus, presented a check to Regina Sherbeer, Outreach Coordinator for Community Health Center at Fort Dodge, for this year's Coats for Kids program. 4-H Club has donated blankets. The Webster County 4-H Club CC Sidekicks recently made and donated 17 Tide Fleece blankets to the Webster County DHS office over a period of 2 years. That club has made and delivered 41 Tide Fleece blankets. Including in the group would be Robbie Jasper and the leader Deb Shelton. Alma Borrow is another leader of the CC Sidekicks Club. Heading back for a little bit more news, two farm buildings and about 40 show hogs were lost in a wind-whipped blaze south of Moreland Friday afternoon. The wind played a huge factor in the fire spread, said Moreland Fire Chief Ken Thompson. No one was hurt in the fire at 1787 250th Street. The fire was reported at 12:08 p.m. Thompson said the fire started in a hog barn, then spread to a farrowing house about 10 to 15 feet away. Both of them will probably be a total loss, he said. A fleet of tanker trucks shuttled water to the scene from Moreland, about 2 miles away. Firefighters returned to the scene at about 4:15 when the farrowing house reignited. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. Online records of the Webster County Assessor's Office list the property owners as Jason and Tiffany Woodruff. Firefighters from Moreland, Otho, Gowrie, Callender, Barnum, and Harcourt responded. Webster County Sheriff's deputies were also on scene. A benefit scheduled for November 7th for Rob Carpenter at the Moose Lodge has been postponed due to the widespread COVID-19 outbreak in Webster County. Event organizers said they are going by the recommendation of the governor not to hold functions for the next 3 weeks. The benefit has been rescheduled for January 30th. There is a new addition to the Webster County Fairgrounds. Settled near the wooded area just east of the auditorium is a log cabin. The log cabin was donated to the Webster County Fairgrounds by Webster County Conservation on Tuesday. The cabin has been at the campgrounds of John F. Kennedy Memorial Park, north of Fort Dodge, since 2008. Cody Peterson, operational supervisor at Webster County Conservation, said the cabin was built in 2007 by the Iowa Central Community College Carpentry Program. It is made from Iowa-grown white oak logs. We bought the logs and construction materials, and Iowa Central donated the labor. We then hauled it out to Kennedy in 2008 and placed it in the campground. The cabin has been rented out for the last 12 years, but was no longer fitting the needs for the campgrounds. It has done well for us, said Peterson. We just noticed a shift of people wanting their own bathrooms and water, a more fancier glamping type of experience. Peterson said they are considering replacing the cabin with another yurt, but in the meantime, Webster County Conservation is glad the cabin has a new home. We are happy to find a good home for it, he said. This has worked out well to donate this to them. Corey Krug, Webster County Fair Board at President, said he is excited to have the new addition to not only the Webster County Fair, but to the fairgrounds, as he hopes it can be utilized for more than just the 1 week the fair is held. Krug said when the conversations began about the opportunity, Webster County conservation leaders said they would like a better presence during the Webster County Fair. The cabin makes a good fit for that, he said. During the fair, there will be a lot of exhibits set up around and inside of it. Peterson said Webster County Conservation has two naturalists who will be heading up the educational and recreational activities at the fair each year. The fair is growing every year by quite a bit. We want to be out here and help educate. Education will revolve around everything from natural resources to outdoor recreational activities that Webster County has to offer. Krug said all those types of details and more are still being ironed out. The cabin will possibly be available as a rental unit during the off-fair season. It is possible we will have camp stalls on the site and then people can do a camp with a cabin. It will probably get a lot of the similar use it did at Kennedy in the off-season. Then for a week during the fair, it will be converted over. The donation of the cabin leaves Krug hopeful for more of a relationship with Webster County Conservation. We placed the cabin in that spot to be able to develop the area for more of a nature experience. It's a natural low-lying wetland. We are hoping for help with some trails, not only for the people using the cabin, but for the local community to come out and enjoy. There is a little work for the fair board in planning on doing the cabin. We will run power to it. It's an air-conditioned and heated facility. We will put a deck on the front with an overhang on the porch that will help expand some of the display. Krug added he is thankful for the developing relationship with Webster County Conservation. We take great pride in any partnership we can get with the community, he said. That is what the fair is all about, educating everyone about the great things about Webster County and what we have. Whether it is a conservation resource or a vendor that comes to show what they do in the county, the cabin is another opportunity for people to come out and educate themselves when they come out to the Webster County Fair. A look at some more from the news of record. On Thursday in Magistrate Court, violation of parole against Jason Onderdonk, 39 of Fort Dodge, transferred to the Board of Parole. Also, fifth-degree criminal mischief against Jason, hearing set for November 25th. Voluntary absence from custody, Stephen Custer, 27 of Pocahontas, preliminary hearing set for November 13th. Unlawful passing of a school bus, Griffin Diggs of Ogden, fined $456. Driving under suspension, Billy Blaylock, 60, of Fort Dodge, $347 fine. David Rosberg, 55, of Fort Dodge, same amount. Speeding 25 and over in a construction zone, Billy Blaylock, 60, of Fort Dodge, fined $1,210. Speeding against David Rosberg, 55, of Fort Dodge, $123.25. On Wednesday, a domestic call, criminal mischief, an assault, forgery, a car accident, a runaway, another runaway, a burglary, a suspicious person, theft, another suspicious person, another runaway, another assault, a suspicious vehicle, a theft, a noise disturbance, theft, and a suspicious person were all reported to the Fort Dodge Police this past week. A new discount tire store location is currently underway just off of 5th Avenue South near the former Sears store location at the Crossroads Mall. According to a company spokeswoman, the store is set to open around August or September 2021 and will employ 10 to 12 team members. We choose Fort Dodge for many of the same reasons we choose to open any new store, said Tim Russo, Discount Tire's Real Estate Strategy Development Manager. Fundamentally, it's a great market with enough demand to exceed our financial requirements. Most importantly, though, it allows for a manager to realize his or her dream while building the community in Fort Dodge with nearly a dozen great jobs for the local community. There are currently 5 discount tire stores in Iowa, 4 in the Des Moines metro area, and 1 in Mason City. Looking real briefly at sports, Cleary and Goldfield Dalles and Humboldt each placed 3 players on the All-North Central Conference volleyball first team the league announced recently. Both the Cowgirls and Wildcats qualified for the state tournament, with Cleary and Goldfield Dalles reaching the semifinals. Seniors Elena Frieslebin, Jaden Jondal, and Morgan Middleton were all unanimous choices for the Cowgirls, with Humboldt's Hori Hayek also earning unanimous status. She was joined by teammates Kendall Clark and Denny McDaniel. Webster City's Elena Finnegan was the lone underclassman on the first team. Kendall Linneman, Lexi Lane from Cleary and Goldfield Dalles, Jada Hofer and Emily Zog of Humboldt, Faith Anderson of Webster City, Alea Perry of Algona, Caitlin Vanderplug of Clear Lake, and Ellie Wood of Iowa Falls Alden comprised the second team. St. Edmund's lone selection was Maya McLean, as the junior was named third team All-NCC. Lily Grote of Humboldt, Nicole Waters of Cleary and Goldfield Dalles, and Webster City's Jocelyn Gorley and Sierra Rattenberg also made the third team. McLean ranked third in the conference and serving at just over 98% with 9 aces. Humboldt and Webster City followed in the final league standings, as Clarion was the regular season league champion. And in sports also, Southern Cal was the victor over Southeast Valley in a football playoff game that was held Friday night. and they have qualified for the state semifinals, so we'll have more information about that when we next read. Looking quickly at the weather, on Monday we should see a 60% chance of storms with highs in the upper 60s. Temperature falls on Tuesday down to 36 with a chance of frozen mix. Mostly sunny Wednesday, high of 50, partly cloudy Thursday and Friday, highs in the mid-40s. 70% chance of frozen mix next Saturday, partly cloudy on Sunday and Monday. We're expecting mostly sunny skies on Monday, but again, temperatures only in the low to mid-40s for highs. And that was almost an hour of reading. I enjoy spending this time with you. You have been listening to Iris, the Fort Dodge Messenger. And I'm Kevin Rogers, your speaker. Of course, these podcasts are available at iowaradioreading.org. And we thank you very much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again real soon.